Hello, everybody. You've tuned in to Radiance by Design here on wonderful BBS Radio. It's Tuesday, the 22nd of July. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and I'm an intuitive and energy counselor. And a lot of us are growing like mad these days. And how we can test and measure our growth is often in our radiance. As our radiance comes through and we can create a higher and higher radiance consciously, it's pretty hard to stabilize the higher radiances that we have because most of us go in and out of mundane things. Plus, we have a lot of time-released emotional doodah that comes through and pulls down our radiance, doesn't it? But that doesn't mean that we're not always improving it and getting lighter and brighter. And my show is a call-in show. It's a show all about you and all about me and wanting to help you learn through meditation, through our vibrational structures, through sound, through breath, through whatever it takes to move your radiance, move your energy fields consciously. So I like it when you call in and talk about your own life, and then we get to move the energy that's perhaps trapped and signifying why you're stuck in your world. Now, my second show today, the paradigm shifter, is Dr. Ramona Rubio. She wrote a book called The Alchemical Woman, and she's a cultural mythologist, which is a really interesting term. Anyway, in her book, there are all these sections. They're all different descriptions of how we go through various phases of consciousness and what it takes to get from one phase to another. She has very exotic names to hers, which are things like, Negredo, which is the blackness, and then the stage going into blue, and going into, which is lapis, and we all know about lapis lazuli, which is a wonderful blue stone, and albedo. These are really complex sounding names, but basically the stages are phases we go through in self-awareness, in our inner journey, in our acceptance of who we are. And then we get bitten. I call them snake bites in my world. We get bitten by experience and so on, and then something begins to change, and then we go through moods and depressions and changes and so on. And her books are wonderful. It's a small book. It's very, very interesting, and it comes up with an awful lot of mythological terms, and I'll let her go into those with you. But it reminded me when I was preparing for her interview about how I've been writing a book for quite a long time. It's because I procrastinate, not because the book is 922,000 pages. Actually, it's a book I'm living, and I call it my near-life experience. So I thought, well, you know, I'm going to talk to you about the various phases and circumstances that I've gone through in life and how it triggered an awakening and an opening. And Dr. Rubio's book, she talks about how eventually, as we wake up and we consciously use these different phases, it brings us to our great work. And for me, it's always been about, gee, I really want to be who I really am, and I have to figure out who that is. Because so often I was living self-deception. Have you ever deceived yourself about who you are, trying to be a certain way, trying to fit convention, that sort of thing? I've done a lot of that, and I know most people I know have done a lot of that, and a lot of our healing work is about helping people extricate themselves from, you know, it's like the identities that we pile up around ourselves to be safe, to be secure, to belong, and so on. Those are the things that will restrict our, in quotes, great work. Jackie Salvitti's team is often talking about the work we do for clearing in order to help us reinvigorate the truth of self and get to our great work. So I think it's a Jungian term, or maybe it's a universal term, or maybe it's an ET term, I don't know, but it's a great one. So I thought that today I would be telling you little phases that I went through, and we'll do some meditative work according to those phases, because I'm sure that what I went through, maybe the details are different, but all of you are striving and reaching to become more empowered, to become less limited, to become more whole about who you are. So I think our stories really are relevant one with the other. So I'm piggybacking Dr. Rubio, and I hope you'll stay around for her show, too. All right, we're going to start off calling in the guides and angels, your guides and angels, too, and we're going to do a structural meditation, which most of you have already heard before. And I'd like you to close your eyes, unless you're driving or walking on a sidewalk with bumps and edges. riding on a lawnmower in the backyard. Yes, and above your head, perhaps a mile and a half, see there a golden ball. And this ball is so gold, it also has the radiances of the kinds of metals that come up with gold, which are palladium and platinum, so on. So you can see a little kind of a whitish gold in there. And then below your spine, perhaps 40 feet, another golden ball. And now around your waist, about 8 feet in radius from your waist, a series of golden balls. And now from the upper golden ball, I want you to drop a myriad or many, many, many filaments of pink light. And these filaments are so... I forgot the other filament. From the upper golden ball through your spine and into the lower golden ball, drop a filament of light. It's like a wire. It's very hot, very bright, and you can actually feel it as you run it through your spine. Excellent. And now from the upper golden ball to the series of golden balls, drop many, many, many filaments of pink light. Excellent. Now you can feel a kind of a buzz, can't you, with a canopy of light pointing upwardly. And now from the series of golden, from the circle of golden balls to the ball below your spine, around 40 feet, drop many, many filaments of pink light. So now you're in a structure that points up and points down. And within this structure, I want you to create a crystal ball. And the outside edges of your crystal ball actually reach the inside edges of your structure. And now feel what that's like inside. Does it feel kind of more feminine, softer, more flowing? And now from there, move into a star tetrahedron, which is kind of like a three-dimensional Star of David. Like a star tetrahedron. And you're inside this three-dimensional Star of David. And it's like your Merkaba, which is your light body. The light body is the vehicle that we've used to shift dimensions, perhaps for millions of years. And so be in your star tetrahedron, or your three-dimensional Star of David, otherwise known as your light body. And I'd like you to spin and spin and spin in this vehicle. Spin and spin and spin yourself. And as you're spinning and spinning, look at the screen in front of you. There's a magical screen in front of you. And on that screen, I want you to create little movies of things that you want to design and do on the planet in this lifetime. Imagine even your great work. So I want you to see perhaps a movie about yourself and your personal exploration in the third dimension. Or perhaps it's your personal exploration in the universe. Keep spinning in your star tetrahedron. And bring in some of the people that you want to help, you want to see doing well, and see in the movie that they're doing the various things that they're trying to do, whether it's healing, creating home, having fun, recovering from being angry. All the various things that human beings go through. Be very selective. Now let's do a little movie about our resources. Let's see the resources flowing from many directions, maybe, or one direction, whatever you wish. And resources for the greater good as well. I like to see that. And what is your great dream? Do you want to write a book? Do you want to travel? Do you want to sleep in the pyramids? Let's take some minutes and do some great dreams. This is like a vision board, isn't it? And when you're doing your movie, I want you to feel yourself in the presence of that great dream. You're already there. You're sleeping in the pyramids. You're climbing the mountain. You're writing a book. You're making a movie. Isn't that great? And you can just feel it and experience it. And how's your health? You want to run a wonderful movie about your health. Issues that you're moving beyond. Excellent. And now move back into your swirling star tetrahedron. Maybe swirling isn't the right word. Spinning and spinning and spinning. It's going very fast. Spin it up. Do you feel a bit dizzy when it's like that? Let's come back into the room. You know, that's a really wonderful tool. The guides gave it to us one day. And I've been using it for quite a long time now, probably 2 years, and it's just so great at enhancing the things that we're trying to create. I'm going to go back into, I'm talking about my story. I call it my near-life experience, because we all have that. We're very magical creatures, aren't we? We're amazing creatures, and we've been limited. We are told over and over by different sources that we're actually an experiment. Perhaps by the Pleiadians, that's what it sounds like, from the beings of the Pleiades. And we've been consciously limited through DNA or through our construction so that we'll only live a certain length of time and that there's only so much that we can actually do and explore. But of course we know that the brain is only like, what, 10% used, or somebody said the other day, 50%. I don't know what it is. But I know that there's a huge amount of DNA, they call junk DNA, and I know there's a huge amount of our brain that we don't use. And that it reminds me that if we've been consciously limited as an experiment to see if we could evolve ourselves or see if we could, you know, work with free will and all that, we've got all kinds of capacity to activate ourselves and become stronger and freer. So I just want to say that becoming, for example, an intuitive, maybe that isn't everybody's goal, but in my case and a lot of people's case, it was a way to become unlimited. It was a way to become open and relatively free in a society that doesn't, you know, honor that as much. Or, you know, I'm in my mid-60s now, so in my day, that wasn't exactly acceptable, and there's an awful lot more intuitives now talking about being intuitive than there were in those days. So anyway, I want to say that I am writing a book called My Near Life Experience because I'm so aware that you break through these limitations and we have access to so much more wisdom and power and strength than we ever imagined. Like when I was tiny, I was in a good Catholic family. We were having a lot of kids in our family and my dad was going to college on the GI Bill. So there wasn't a lot of money and my mom was kind of in a panic. So I remember being very, very small and being able to see, she was, in those days they gave you a lot of lickings. These days they wouldn't approve of that, but in any case, I could watch how when she was doing all that, she did not want to do that, but that there was a part of her that was not like that at all, and yet that's what she was doing. I could see that. I could see the discrepancy between people telling you they were glad to see you or whatever, and not meaning it. I could always tell the difference between what big people said and what they really felt. And I thought it was pretty strange when I was small that to big people, basically they tell you not to lie, but they all lie about lying. So it was really funny. And the big people who knew how to live weren't particularly happy people. I didn't really want to be like that. I also really had a passion for God, even as a little wee kid. And I used to think that he was pretty messed up. He was a pretty good guy, but he was very messed up because there were a lot of very strange things here. The other thing was when the going got rough or it was a little chaotic at home, I used to go outside and sit in this ditch. It was a little wee ditch outside the house. And I would pull my hat down over my brows and it was like tuning little knobs. And I could tune into where I had been before I was born in this life. And I remember, the thing that I remember the most sharply, because the images stopped coming to me after I was about 7 or 8, which is right out of the textbooks, isn't it? They say that we start really blocking our senses and our feelings and our knowings by about 7 or 8. But in any case, I don't remember all the pictures before, but I know that many of the beings that I remember in my prior life were shapes. And I do get dreams like that at times, where everybody's in shapes rather than in human forms. And the other thing that was extreme about it was the radiances and the colors. The colors were outrageously beautiful. So I was laughed at. I've probably said this on the air before. I would get my little peacock crayons, which weren't exactly the swiftest crayons, and try really hard to replicate what I knew to be, for example, the sounds of my name, the colors and the sounds of my name. And I could never get the colors the way I was accustomed to seeing them in my memories of where I'd been before. The other thing I knew about where I'd been before, it had something to do with the universe, and I knew someone out in the universe missed me. I knew a lot that there was something out in the universe for me. So I would sit in this funny little ditch and probably get pretty dirty, and I would run these pictures of what life was before. Now, I'm wondering today, I was just cogitating this a while back, I wonder, because I had a daughter years later, and I'd say, where were you before? What did you remember? She'd go, Mom, I was just born. She never responded that way, because we're all different, you know, in her subjective world. I know she's pretty magical, but her subjective world did not cover that particular subject. So I had to back up and not push her on that. But what if some little one was saying, you know, about so-and-so, some little fellow said to me once, he was 3, said, Auntie Ronnie, don't drink so much tea because I did that before and I died. And I really believed him. And I believe that if we really believe these little kids and really get them to go into these pictures and talk about them and so on, then they have an avenue into a much greater self-knowing than this restricted third-dimensional reality. I really believe that that's so. Anyway, that wasn't my case. I stumbled around in it, and like many other people, the saddest thing about it was that I think I call it self-deception. You start living a life that isn't you, and you start realizing, I knew that. I just felt like I was split, and because when I looked at my mother, I would say things that apparently really freaked her out. And she would say, they're going to lock you up because you're crazy. And I was pretty scared about that. I didn't want to be locked up. I'm kind of a free spirit person. And in those days, that was the days of Girl Interrupted, for those of you who have seen that movie, you know, where they often, if you were aberrative at all, they put you in the psych ward for a while. I did not want to do that. So in any case, the saddest thing was for me, and many, many, many of all of us, probably everybody listening here, we try to behave a certain way so that we'll make it in the convention, in the reality in which humanity is being marketed at the time. I think of it all as marketing, you know. And then you start deceiving yourself. You know, this is how I am to be good. This is how I tell the truth. Well, you and I know that a lot of people who teach you about the truth aren't really telling the truth. So I had some sort of strange self-deception going on all the time. And as I got older, it was confusing because I'd look at people's faces, and if, for example, somebody was going to, I'll exaggerate and say, do me in. Somebody was going to cause some problem for me or was going to actually set me up for something and then let me down. Their face would change. Now, it took me years to realize that that happened consistently as a very helpful warning, but I did not decode it. I did not come up with the code. So this person's face would change into something gray, like their face would slip off the side, as I was looking at them, would slip off the side of their face and turn into something kind of gray. Or the grayness would start first in this weird pulsing, and then their face would slip off, and there would be a different face underneath, like a young woman, her face would slip off, and what would be revealed would be an ancient Chinese an indigenous person who was extremely wrinkled. I mean, it was usually very extreme changes, and they frightened me, and they gave me stomach aches and so on. And I would wonder later, I'm going, why didn't I sit there and look at those? Because I was getting messages. It's just that I had no idea how to decode those messages, and of course I was laboring under the difficulty that I was crazy. So because this was happening, I was crazy. But in reality, I look back, and any of the ones I remember were huge warnings that somebody was setting me up or somebody was going to deceive me or let me down and so on. And I remember Carolyn Mace, so many of us have followed a lot of her teachings, reminding us years ago that betrayal by people close to you was a real fast access to the spiritual path. So I guess that's what I was doing, is getting onto my spiritual path. Now, that was a huge problem for me. And when I said self-deception, let me see, I'm looking at my little notes here. When I was a teenager, I was getting exhausted all the time. I was wandering around inside being very different from what was on the outside and tended to feel very emotional. So I was very emotional and a little out of control that way. I would cry at the drop of a hat. I cried all kinds of people's tears, I'm sure, because I did not know the journey of the empath at that time. So you see what I'm saying when I say near-life experience is that I had all of these clues about what my talents are, but I had no idea how to break the code. I just thought I was wrong. So then I met my husband-to-be. I was a teenager. I was going through all this stuff, and I went to university, became a school teacher, and so on, and had a date for my 21st birthday with a fellow named Mark. And he and I sat and talked out at UBC's, out at university where we were both attending. I was going to summer school by the time this conversation happened. And he was also, I believe, I don't remember, but anyway, we were sitting out on campus talking, and he told me he was going to die young. And I thought that was pretty interesting, and I said, oh, that's funny. I always thought I might be a lonely old lady. Well, I hope I've changed that. But in any case, what we decided at that time was that we would set up, if we still knew each other, because this relationship was, who knew how it was going to go, we were going to set up a whole list of ways of contacting. If somebody passed and we still knew each other, and there was life on the other side, or there was reincarnation, we would set up contact points and ways of telling each other what exactly we had experienced, or that there was life. So 12 years later, I was going through that experience with him. So in the meantime, what happened is he and I, we traveled in Europe and Africa. And when I was over in Europe, it was particularly in Greece, and I must go back there now with all the awakening that I've gone through. When I was in the Parthenon, the Necropolis, those areas, they didn't charge in those days. It was the olden days, remember? They didn't charge, and I used to go and walk around, and I would sit on the stairs, and I would just be mesmerized because I could feel life for thousands of years running through my body, and I knew it. But I didn't tell the kids that I was traveling with at all. I just would go every day and sit there while they were doing whatever they were doing. And just sit there and experience this amazing, those were the centers of wisdom and culture and so on. There was just an amazing energy just sitting in these places. So I have a caller, and that's good. You're interrupting my monologue, which is probably about time. You're on the air.
Hi, Veronica. This is Vicki.
Hi, Vicki. How are you?
I'm so enjoying your story. I can't wait to read the book. I gotta tell you, it's just like, how cool is that?
Thank you.
I did have a little question, though. You just spoke of decoding.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you draw upon how to decode? Is it different for everybody? And
you know what I would say, Vicki, that's really interesting is the whole section of this talk, and I've probably taken too long on this preamble, is about things that happen in your life. So I'm living a life of deception. And the decoding and finding out about it is that something will stop you in your tracks. Something will, I call it snake bites.
Mm-hmm.
Something, just hang on a second.
You just turned me off, I think.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you like me to be louder?
Yeah, that would be good. Well, I have a strange phones here. I don't know what the deal is.
Okay, well, just let me finish this thought, because I think everybody needs to hear this, is that,
yeah.
And it's a good question, is when something happens to stop you in your tracks, okay, then you'll, for example, if you've been betrayed and you don't know it, and you get betrayed and you come apart, and I call it the snake bite, then you look back and see that all those people that you had seen whose faces had changed had a similar look to this person. You just open it, and then you start realizing, oh, my gosh, those were messages, and I didn't realize that. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So the coding seems to kind of, decoding seems to come from recognition more than anything. Mm-hmm. Do you have some issues that you want to talk about?
I would like to feel that I'm issue-free.
Well, I know, Vicki, I say to everybody at home, because I've seen you decode aspects of your own personal power. Vicki's a healer. Do you want to talk about some way that you awaken to yourself?
Lots of walking, I think. That's one way that I did it.
And what did you do with your mind while you were walking?
My walking was, I let go.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasted, and so my mind would just kind of open. And then what happened with that was pretty amazing, because when I did that, then it changed and it became, I let go, I trust God. And that went on for a few weeks as I walked every day. And I continued that. And then it went into, I let go, I am God.
Aha.
And that was a pretty phenomenal change, but it brought up fear in me, and because of issues of what gives me the right, you know, old stuff. So then I had to dive into that. nature is what, you know, grounds me. And
okay, so I just want to say something about you, which is when you were small, nature was where you went for wisdom and power, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I long for that again, that, you know, to be able to decode what holds me back from being in that, and I think it's starting to, but it's like I kind of get the messages after the information after something happens. And
so as a child, would you say, you know, you heard my story about going out into the ditch. As a child, would you say you went out toward horses or to animals?
I would go out and be with horses and
after
animals.
You were frustrated?
Pardon me?
After you were frustrated?
Well, I don't remember a time when I wasn't frustrated.
Do you remember being frustrated as a tiny? Do you remember being a tiny person?
Not really. You know what I kind of picked up on today? I spent some time with one of my horses, and I realized that that when I was a tiny person before the ages of four or something,
mm-hmm.
that I knew I could have or be or do anything. And then somewhere it just got smushed away, and I feel like that's coming back up through me. I don't know how to explain it. There's
no, that makes sense, doesn't it?
It does to me, because there's something, I feel something moving up through me, and it feels, you know, that sometimes newness is a scary place for some unknown, our humanness, I suppose. And so allowing that to move through me and know that that's truth,
mm-hmm.
because I was always taught that, you know, wasn't truth.
So it's like the limitations that kind of descend. I talk about living in self-deception, living.
Yes.
Yeah, that's where we, and I think many, many people, when we're little, have an awareness that we can do amazing things.
Yeah. So there's one thing that is happening to me that's kind of strange. Maybe you have some clarity on this.
Okay.
I've been working on, you know, letting go of the future and letting go of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And being just in me,
mm-hmm.
and I get kind of tingly inside, you know, I go, oh, good, that's life force. But when I walk, it's like I'm walking in place, and everything is coming towards me.
Hmm.
Like, I'm not moving, everything else is moving.
That's great. I love that. Well, I do things like that consciously as a perceptive shift, because I like that.
So what is it?
It's just a shift in your perceptions. It's sort of stabilizing. You know, it's like focusing on, in a movie, I can't really explain it. It's like
right.
focusing on something that you usually don't focus on.
Uh-huh. But it feels really good. I mean, when I'm there, it feels like really good.
And I think it's really good for our psyches to shift our perceptions like that.
Oh, okay.
You know, meaning, if we want to be unlimited, which I think is the name of the game here,
yeah.
To be unlimited is to kind of break the walls that we're in.
Uh-huh.
And I think that those kinds of exercises really work well for that.
Yeah. Okay.
And for me, a lot of things like that happen throughout a day.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah, and I believe the one of the things why I call it near life, I think when we're really living, we enjoy those, we go into those, and we take them as gateways to a greater perception.
That's yeah, right. I actually would like more of them, so I try to focus on it more.
Good.
I do focus on it more. I don't try. I do. I do.
Excellent. Well, I really enjoy that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. So that was good. She was talking about the way your perceptions shift from one way of focusing to another, and also the fact that she had, when she was little, and how many of you have had this, a real consciousness about who you are, who you really are, and then the numbing, and then the closing away from it, and then the defense, and then the deception of ourselves. What I wanted to say about the self-deception is I used to feel when I was a young woman, married woman, because I married Mark after our African travels, I used to feel that I was two people, that on the outside I was presenting something that was so different from me, and I wondered if I could keep it that way very long because that would keep me safe from the world and nobody'd know how crazy I really was inside, because inside I was pumping all this perception and understanding and stuff that wasn't acceptable. But you know, you can only live like that for so long without stretching your nervous system like mad. So when he died, he died for a period of 16 months, so it wasn't just in a minute. But he did some kind of weird behavior and there were betrayals going on and so on. So when he died, I came apart. One of the reasons for that, that I really, really dissembled when my husband died, was that I had been living a life that wasn't really me. You know, I've been trying to, I was a philosopher and he was a political person. We lived a political life. It's just like on and on. I did the things I thought I was supposed to do in order to make myself a hearty member of society and a good wife and all that sort of thing. So when he died, how can I put it? I had been betrayed by my women's group and I was a feminist at the time. So there was sort of no aspect of my life, whether it was my family of origin, whether it was my women friends, there was always a couple that were very, very stable and right there for me. But all the different places in which I had put my loyalties and put my external adaptation to, you know, things that I belonged to that weren't necessarily in my heart, none of that made any sense. So I was really like I was adrift in this sea. And I was very conscious of the fact that I had nothing to hang my hat on. I didn't even know where we lived because we moved a lot. I didn't even know where I should live. I had no real attachments in life. I even had some money. And it was pretty crazy because I realized that I wasn't who I was and how I was going to find that one. And then what happens is it's sort of relevant to Vicky's question, is then you start figuring out what's the truth of self, and inside you feel quite shredded. And I'm sure a lot of you have gone through that. You really feel like all the pieces have come apart and you don't even know which ones you want to put back into your structure and so on. So it was pretty interesting time. I tried to get jobs that I thought were appropriate. Nothing worked for me until I finally, and I didn't want anybody to know how crazy I felt because I didn't want to be locked up. So I spent a lot of time putting one foot in front of the other and counting from 200 to 1. Walking 6 miles a day, and so on. This is after the job thing fell apart. But what I did is I got into health foods finally through synchronistic series of events. And whilst in health foods, I finally learned, I had planned in my heart and soul to go and work where people were going to help themselves and not be dependent on a system so they could find out how they worked. And I wanted to find out how I worked. So I got to minimum wage. I worked in health foods with a guy who knew so much about nutrition that it was incredible. And I learned how I worked, for heaven's sakes. I became stronger and more vital. And I left there to do a lot of interviews, to study meditation, to work on myself, self, self, self. I lived mostly an isolated life except where I did videos for cable television and interviewed all kinds of alternative healers, which is kind of hilarious because that was, 30 years ago, and now I'm laughing going on my Paradigm Shifters. I'm interviewing some really amazing healer consciousness people. Wow. But then I wasn't getting paid for it. I was putting it out there and just being a volunteer. Well, I'm not getting paid for it now, but it really pays off, doesn't it, to really explore and understand the parameters. You know, that was the thing I loved then, is going through talking to all these different healers. I found all these different ways of stretching my limitations, of recreating the vitality of life as I knew it. It was all around me, but I had to reach out and explore. The other thing is I had to be ripped to find it. I do intuitive work with many, many people, and I find that so many of us go into periods of pain and being ripped by life circumstances. Again, betrayal, being somebody dying, somebody divorcing. But very often it's finding yourself in a job or something in which you're totally alienated from yourself. So you're living, as I call it, your time of deception. And all of a sudden, something triggers it, and you can't do it one more day. You can't stand it. Maybe you come apart. Maybe you cry all the time. Maybe you just feel like you're cracking. We used to call it having a nervous breakthrough. Many of the great teachers will tell you that they just came apart. And then what happens is all the samsara, all these different energies that run through our body that hold information telling us who we are and how we're supposed to be, most of which comes from reactions, begin to bust up inside of us. And then we are in the process of having to pull these things out bit by bit and release them in order to allow the flow of our, let's call it our divinity, our divine self, and our soul journey to come through. Your soul journey is so powerful that if you're not doing what it is you should be doing, it's going to bust you up at some point in your life. It's going to break apart things that you're establishing as your safety measures or your security. So many, many of you have had that kind of experience. So as I call it, my near-life experience is like working in health foods is a great way to find out that that's not who I was. Working with these interviews was a great way to keep expanding. I walked for miles and miles each day. I always wrote. I began to pendle. I started talking to my pendulum. How many of you pendle? Quite a few of you, I can see. And I started to get connected to the higher beings. And it was interesting because to stop my visions, you know, many of you would know that if you have diabetes or hypoglycemia, that sort of thing, you get visions and a little bit out of control. So by this time, I had doctored my blood sugar like nobody's business. I'm a little bit sloppier about it these days, but I'll tell you what, everything that went in my mouth was carefully planned and designed for a certain period of that part of my life. And the other thing I found that really helped with blood sugar and with stabilizing visions was movement. So I began a dance workout, which I still do, and it isn't very pretty. It's a boogieing for 20-odd minutes and focusing inside, coloring up my chakras. Usually, if I had questions at the beginning, by the end, my question would be answered through some kind of very clear vision, whereas before, visions would take me over, and I couldn't figure out what they, you know, I didn't, like as Vicki asked, how did you decode them? I couldn't decode them until I literally cleaned up my body. I purified my body. I purified my intentions. We didn't call them intentions in those days, but I was very clear about what I was going to focus on and what I was clearing out. So that became the rudimentary thing where I began to really invest in being who I was or being connected with who I was. It's kind of exciting. So I want you to call in and tell me what you're doing right now with your world and your journey. You can call in at 877-876-5227, or if you're in Canada, 888-810-8322. If you want to call from everywhere else in the world, it's 530-876-3222, 530-876-3222. And, yeah, I'd love to hear about your experiences. So then the other thing I found out is as my time went on, I began to do my workout no matter where I was, and I would have, I had channeling experiences. I was studying radio, and at the same time I went to a channeling weekend, and I knew that I was fighting with my awakening. I knew by this time that I was trying to awaken, and you know, I was still scared of it. I think I was scared of what wasn't new. or what wasn't something I could control or rely on, keep my deception strong and steady. So I would practice every day for about 10 minutes. Oh, as I said, I was studying radio, and then I became a radio. And I would practice every day for about 10 or 20 minutes. And then finally, the channeling became quite clear, and it would come through. And I began to work with a great number of people. But I found also that it began to, I began to learn not from the channeling so much. Okay, I'll jump to my story later. I'm glad you're interrupting me. My own story is getting wearing. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Veronica. This is Brian.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Talking about waking up, eh?
Oh, yes. I've been doing that a lot the past couple months.
you have. Good for you.
Oh, I've been really taking your advice and just meditating more and more. And my mind's becoming more calming my mind, you know, just trying not allowing the influences of the world, the collective, to interfere so much.
That's great. Good for you.
Yes.
Are you channeling?
I might be. You might be able to tap into that a little bit greater than I can. But
Are you time traveling? Now, you got some really good light going. Are you time traveling? What are you doing?
Oh, I must be then.
Are you seeing things?
Yes, I am.
Good. Okay.
I can't get this out of my mind, Veronica. There is a group of beings around me. They're all white. But you can kind of tell that outline of their body, but they're very, very white. And they have blue eyes. I don't know who they are, but I've just been opening up to them. So it might be an extraterrestrial contact. It might be angels. I don't know.
I think that they're like a brotherhood of light,
yes,
kind of beings. And they're all white? Yeah.
Yes. Very, very white. It might be on their ship, on their planet, but it seems like they're just kind of full of love.
And they're teaching you a great deal, aren't they?
Yes.
It feels like you're being enfolded.
Yes.
I think this is your inherited, I think this is your cellular heritage, you know that?
That's probably why it's coming in so strong for me. I mean, I really see them. I mean, it's almost like through my third eye, I can really see them.
Do you ever cry? I mean, does it ever lift your...
Not as much as I used to.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have, I think in the beginning I did, because I wanted to see this so bad. But because I've been meditating more, I don't cry as much. But it's like a feeling of love, of content that I have with myself a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still working on it, but it feels so good.
But it seems like, what it seems like to me is that you're breaking into your multidimensionality and you're being gifted with a certain kind of tutelage, if you will, sort of.
Ah.
Yeah, and It feels like, you know, when I was talking about near life, it's like, it feels like it's becoming part of your real stable fabric to have,
yeah,
that expansion. And that's when we start stepping into a much more multidimensional awareness.
Yes, I've been picking up extrasensory skills, or actually just reacquiring them, I guess how you say it. Reconnecting, that's it. Reconnecting some of those past lives from... those gifts that I used to have maybe in Lemuria.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I could hear my inner self almost, or a person next to me. I've experienced this. Like, I could actually hear a small voice. It was audible, like people would call clairaudient.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that. And
in yourself?
It made me feel so good. Yes, within my heart, like within the mind's heart or something. It was just real fascinating.
That's great. That's where it's really helpful to write it as you speak it, because it's like...
Yes, and speaking of writing, I have been writing more of my dreams down.
Good.
I've been keeping a journal, and those that come through the most powerful for me, I write those down, the time that it happened. And I've been seeing a pattern over the past couple months that I'm having a contact, at least one UFO experience, once a month.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
That's very exciting.
And I also saw just to let you know, I did have a physical contact sighting here on April 16th, past couple months, 3 months ago.
So what was that like?
An orange orb of light, and actually two of them, two balls of light. and they weren't too far away. They were probably maybe a mile or two up in the sky. It didn't seem like they were far away at all.
Hmm.
And I had a contact at night. I saw it, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. But it didn't frighten me either. I wasn't scared, but I did feel a tingling sensation rise in the back of my neck. And I don't know if that was them scanning me or not, but I did see this, and this was fascinating.
That's wonderful. How exciting.
And it was kind of funny because the next day, the day after that, or actually that was at night, around 10 o'clock at night. And then on the April 17th, that next morning, we had an earthquake that rippled through, Illinois that came up through Indiana, the state of Indiana.
Hmm.
So it was very fascinating. So I don't know if they were stabilizing the area the night before, you know.
So let me just ask you this. Don't you feel like you're waking up and waking up and waking up?
Yes. The big thing that's the hardest, and like you were referring back to, is when a person really wakes up, the people that are closest around us, it's like, in a way, we get a little frustrated. A way we cry because we can't understand. We want to share this with them, but they have to awaken on their own time. It's their choice.
So are you finding that you don't get, people don't like it when you wake up?
No. Yes. I mean, yes, I'm finding that exactly. It's hard for the, it's hard
well, because
the people
it,
around me.
It yeah. literally tears the fabric of people's comfort.
Yeah, the whole the structure. Yes.
Yeah. I know.
Yes.
It's
You're
really
exactly
hard to
right.
To understand. You remember, what's that, Close Encounters? Do you remember how he...
Yes, yes.
I'll never forget that, because that's really what happens. People pull away. Maybe not so much now, because we're hearing more about it, but it seems to be the case for most of us.
It can be a struggle, a push and pull. And how I can deal with it, it's just finding people of like mind and sharing, like with you, you know, on the phone, sharing with people and being open about it and talking about it really does raise the consciousness of the planet. So it's wonderful what you do.
Oh, thank you. And also, I've talked to other beings who have awakened and so on, and they say that in their homes and so on, they just don't go there. They just carry on like it's normal.
Yes.
Like
yes.
they don't make they don't
it if I can. Yes.
Yeah, they don't have their spouses and children have to go there.
Right, right.
Very often over time some will, but it doesn't have to happen and you can still have a life.
Yes, that's what I'm learning to do really right now for me.
Yeah. And be compassionate for people because we're all just trying to get through this life, right?
Yes. In your book, Veronica, is it out or will it be out later?
Oh, I'll have to finish it first. Today I'm just talking about it.
I would definitely love to read it.
I'll keep you posted, Brian.
Yes.
You keep
me
posted.
And Bob, yes, you have a wonderful evening, Veronica, and I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you so much.
God bless.
Bye. Bless you. Bye. So there was another example of how when you awaken, and awakening to me means doesn't always have to be, I was going to say it doesn't have to be psychic, but I'm going, I guess that's what we're talking about, isn't it? You're having to wake up to knowing more than what the third dimension seems to offer. So it's like learning, I'll just finish mine in a nutshell, is that I just went pell-mell through learning and growing, having a child and so on. But as I did my dancing and I did my channeling, my visions just kept... how can I explain it? All of a sudden, they embodied much more. For example, I would get little mappings on how certain guides worked in certain levels, and that there would be other levels of them, and how you go through these different series of awakenings that would help you get from one level to the other in terms of consciousness and understanding. I would have these really vivid visions, and I loved it. I would go look for them, and they were better than any movie. Spielberg would eat his heart out, I tell you. So my near life was the beginning of... My near life means that I lived a life of self-deception where I kept the lid on all of these things. But I'll tell you something, as we do more meditation, you know those structures that we did at the very beginning? As you do that kind of thing, it's really, really amazing how much radiance comes up in your thoughts, in your feelings, in your expansions, how you get messages and how you can be awakened to the information that's around you at all times, because it's there. There's such a movement going on in the collective right now, and I'm going to ask Ramona Rubio, who's my paradigm shifter today, to talk about it as well. As the expression that I had of my life and my limitation. I think a lot of people can be still experiencing that, but the reality is that the whole collective is pulsing with some kind of change right now. We know a lot about, well, we know all the, or some of the myths about 2012, or some of the suggestions, or some of the ideas that are coming up, that the frequencies are moving very fast, and that we're moving from being a certain kind of species into a species that might be more, again, self-realized individuals who are living into their own truth and vitality, and then moving that kind of energy into the collective, so the collective itself picks up speed and picks up vibration, and that we have a whole different concept. Who was it we were talking to the other day who was saying between, my guides actually, they were saying between 2010 and 2015, it was going to be really amazing how much waking up and how much respect in humanity is going to be cultivated. That the respect that we have for one another, I think, increases when more and more people are in truth with themselves. If you're really in touch with your own gifts and so on, how can there be any competition? Because there's nobody in the whole universe that's like you. So anyway, we're talking about what I was going to ask Ramona Rubio about was, they talk about these various phases of evolution in the alchemical woman, and she gives you exercises on how to get from one phase to the other with more and more grace and so on. But I'm thinking that those phases might be changing, or they might be speeding up. You see what I'm saying is that those are patterns that are resting within the collective, and I'm fascinated by this. Is the energy of our collective changing enough? Will some of these patterns be gone through much more swiftly? What's happening with the collective consciousness? Is the influence, and maybe she won't know this when I'm asking it of my guides too, is the influence of the downloads coming from the universe, is that really affecting us so quickly right now that we move through these changes very, very rapidly? And maybe we don't have to alienate people around us because maybe the downloads are coming through and really affecting and touching the minds and hearts of many. I was taught many years ago that consciousness would rise in all kinds of people, whether they were in the top of the military, whether they were hiding under the earth, it didn't matter. Consciousness is coming through. So we're going to be talking about that with Ramona Rubio as well. So I don't think we have any more time, do we? Okay. So I would like, you know, if any of you'd like to have a session with me, and we'll talk about you and your near-life experiences, and we're going to talk about what your gifts are, where you're headed in this life, where are you snagged in relationships, in health, in moolah, money, and resources, and so on. If you'd like to have a session with me, email me, Veronica, at VeronicaEntwistle, no H in Entwistle.com. That's Veronica at VeronicaEntwistle.com. Or if you have a suggestion for what you'd like to talk about on this show or on Paradigm Shifters, I'd love to hear from you, or any feedback and commentaries on the shows. I would really enjoy hearing from you as well. I don't know who's going to be my paradigm shifter next week. I don't know who my guest is, so I guess that means I'm going to do some magic. We just did a whole bunch of paradigm shifters from the Dowsers Conference, and what we're preparing now is a compilation CD from that time, because Dowsers are a real interesting lot. They're used to working with the lay of the land in order to find water. At least that's how they traditionally started. But now at the Dowsers Conference, there are all these different people who are purveying styles of energy that were affecting health and consciousness and wealth and all that. It was really exciting. So we're going to have a really nice umbrella DVD coming out on that. It won't be a visual DVD. It'll just be a lot of different interviews on a CD-like thing. So I'm going to tell you, Dawn, we're going to take a break till just after 5 o'clock, and we're going to bring back Dr. Ramona Rubio, and we're going to be talking about the alchemical woman that she co-authored with Catherine Davidson, and it's going to be very exciting. She's talking about the various phases we go through. We'll see you in about 5 minutes.